Good morning, Nexus Online, and welcome to this, our Palm Sunday service. And I want to reflect, of course, on Palm Sunday, but I also want to do a little reflecting off the top here on Terrence Malick's film, A Hidden Life. And if you haven't seen it, again, please make it part of your Holy Week experience. It's such a great, deep meditation on faith. And the center of the story, of course, surrounds this man, Franz Jagerstatter. He's a lay pastor in Austria in the 1930s, and Germany is, of course, asking everyone to swear allegiance to Hitler, to get on Hitler's side. And while everyone in the town is sort of going ahead, getting aboard the bandwagon, Franz holds out, and it starts to create a lot of problems for him. But what he can't understand is why the church seems to be getting on board with this. And so he pays a visit to the local bishop in this nice cathedral and asks him, what are we doing here? And the bishop counsels him, hey, just swear allegiance. Just say the words. We'll never have to fight. We'll never be on the front line. They'll make us pastors, bishops, chaplains, and, you know, we will never have to fight. Just say the words. But of course, Franz can't compromise his integrity. He's not willing to part with what he knows to be right and true. And as he comes out of the church, he encounters this painter. Ohlendorf is the name of this church painter. And he's painting frescoes and paintings on the ceilings, religious imagery. And he starts a conversation with the church painter about the nature of his work and how it all ties in with what's happening around them. And this is what Ohlendorf says. What we do is just create sympathy. We create admirers. We don't create followers. Christ's life is a demand. We don't want to be reminded of that, so we don't have to see what happens to the truth. But a darker time is coming when men will be more clever. They won't fight the truth. They'll just ignore it. I paint their comfortable Christ with a halo over his head. How can I show what I haven't lived? Someday I might have the courage to venture, but not yet. Someday I'll paint the true Christ. It's a profound story because be it the German Austria Church of the 1930s, the U.S. Church today, or the Russian Orthodox Church today, and Russia even now sprinkling their holy water on guns and tanks, the point Terrence Malick is making throughout this film is this: the church so often compromises again and again on who we know Christ to be, because all we end up doing in churches, if we aren't careful, is painting a comfortable Christ. A Christ with a halo over his head, but a Christ that doesn't demand much from us. But if we painted the true Christ, we would realize the demand Jesus' life really is. And you know, I think this starts to sharply come into view as Jesus' journey to Jerusalem and the cross begins to unfold on this Palm Sunday. And in the background and context is so important here because it rings true for today. You see, it's the year 30 AD in Jerusalem, and the date marks almost 90 years since the Roman Empire had attacked, taken, and then occupied the land of Israel, the land of the Hebrew people. And for 90 years, these people had suffered under the cruelties of Roman occupation. They had had a superpower come in and take their land. For 90 years, the Romans and Hebrew people had lived in this constant state of tension. Rome was the cruel occupiers, the Vladimir Putin of the day, you could say, forcing the Hebrews to play the role of an occupied and oppressed people. And yet, once a year, this uneasy tension between the two forces, it really threatened to bubble over. Because you see, once a year, the Hebrew people would all pilgrimage and travel to Jerusalem to celebrate a national holiday, the Passover. And so once a year from farms and villages and towns throughout Israel, people would congregate, flow into Jerusalem because they were going to celebrate the anniversary of their liberation from Egypt. It was a holiday that was a celebration of their story, their ancient history, the story of God liberating them from the oppression of another global superpower, Egypt. And every year, this holiday under Roman rule was like, it's like a powder keg just waiting to explode. Because, I mean, what would happen if all these Hebrew people were in Jerusalem celebrating an ancient liberation and they started to think about having liberation now. And so Rome wasn't stupid. They knew what was coming. They knew this annual holiday had the potential to be problematic, to be troubling. So every year in the days leading up to Passover, as Jews from all over the country are descending on Jerusalem, what they would do is they would send a military convoy south into Jerusalem from its headquarters up in Caesarea Philippi. And so what would happen is the days leading up to the Passover, this massive convoy of chariots and war horses led by, on this particular year, Pilate would head down from up north, come into Jerusalem via the west. And the idea was this with their military parade. It's great you want to celebrate your little national holiday, but if you even think about a resistance, a revolt, an uprising, let us remind you, plain as day, that we will crush you. And this would happen year after year after year, and the people had been waiting for so long. 90 years they had waited, and at this exact same moment, from the south and the east, there's another person coming into Jerusalem. His name was Jesus. And he had been causing quite the stir over the past few years, healing people, talk of defending the poor. I mean, under Roman taxation, who wasn't poor? I mean, the elite, the 1%, sure, but even more intriguing about this Jesus guy is he talked a whole lot about a coming kingdom, a new kingdom. And this had people excited. Perhaps the tyrannous rule of Rome was coming to an end. Perhaps it was time for a kingdom of Israel to emerge again. Perhaps it was time to take Jerusalem back, time to fight. And then the whispers. Because Jesus is just outside of Jerusalem and he's waiting to make his entrance into the city right as Passover is coming. And so crowds begin to form and hope begins to grow. And the parallels to our time, especially right now in the world, they're so hard to miss this Palm Sunday. Because as Jesus enters the city, what are the people hoping for? What has got them celebrating and excited? They're hoping for a leader, a king, a president to come and take back their country. For the Hebrew people, what they're hoping Jesus is a President Zelensky from Ukraine. A leader like Zelensky to ride into the city, a leader who would become the face of the resistance. And yet when Jesus arrives, we don't find either the horrible brutality of a leader like Putin, but we also don't find the resistance leader, fighter of a Zelensky. We find something else. As they approached Jerusalem and came to Bethpage on the Mount of Olives, Jesus sent two disciples, saying to them, "Go to the village ahead of you, and at once you will find a donkey tied there with her colt by her. Untie them and bring them to me. And if anyone says anything to you, say that the Lord needs them, and he will send them right away." And this took place to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet. "Say to daughter Zion, see your king comes to you, gentle and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey." And the disciples went and did as Jesus had instructed them. They brought the donkey and the colt and placed their cloaks on them for Jesus to sit on. And a very large crowd spread their cloaks on the road, while others cut branches from trees and spread them on the road. The crowds that went ahead of him and those that followed shouted, "Hosanna to the Son of David! Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord! Hosanna in the highest heaven!" And when Jesus entered Jerusalem, the whole city was stirred and asked, "Who is this?" The crowds answered, "This is Jesus, the prophet from Nazareth in Galilee." Jesus comes to Jerusalem, and the question on everyone's lips and minds is, who is this? What kind of leader is he going to be? They're with him. They're ready to go, but they don't really know who he is. They're wrong about their assumptions, because what they're hoping for, what they're expecting, is a President Zelensky to come and lead them out from under the thumb of Roman oppression. But that would have been their comfortable Christ, not the true Christ. Because what the crowd was expecting was Zelensky, sure, who will lead us in war, who will end the result, who will lead the revolt, the resistance. That's what they were hoping for. But even a man as brave and noble as Zelensky, is no true Christ. You see, what the prophecy Jesus wrote into Jerusalem to fulfill, what was this? Because it's sort of stuck in the middle of the story, a bit of an awkward interlude, you could say. Jesus coming in on a donkey, and apparently this donkey riding is to fulfill some kind of prophecy. Well, it turns out that this prophecy it's fulfilling comes from Zechariah. And in Zechariah, the book prophesies about a coming Messiah, not a coming prophet, as the people had assumed, but a coming Messiah, a coming king. And what will this Messiah do? This is what Zechariah says. Rejoice greatly, daughter Zion. Shout, daughter Jerusalem. See, your king comes to you, righteous and victorious, lowly and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey. And I will take away the chariots from Ephraim and the war horses from Jerusalem. And the battle bow will be broken because he will proclaim peace to the nations. Here, revealed on Palm Sunday, is the true Christ. He doesn't come to wage war, but peace. He doesn't come to wage war as a superpower, but he also doesn't come to wage war on behalf of the oppressed, the occupied, and the attacked, those under siege. Christ does not ever, ever ride the red horse of war. And the crowds on Palm Sunday were excited about this, but they couldn't fully understand in less than a week this same crowd would be the ones calling for him to be killed. Because what they saw as Christ rode into town there was their comfortable Christ, the one who would simply confirm and justify what they already wanted to do, which was fight. And eventually they would. In the year AD 70, they would get completely crushed, but Jesus wasn't their President Zelensky. Jesus didn't ride into Jerusalem to fight evil. He came to resist evil, to stand against evil, yes, but no, not fight it. And this is where I believe the true Christ, the painting of the true Christ in our midst, arrives as a demand and a challenge. And it's this: the church and the Christian is not called to fight evil. Rather, we are called to stand against it. And I'm sure maybe that sounds like a bit of a semantics game. Allow me to unpack that a little bit for you. The church, the Christian, is not called to fight evil. Rather, we're called to stand against it. Paul picks up on this theme in Ephesians. He says, "Finally, be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Therefore, put on the full armor of God so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground, and after you have done everything, to stand." So stand firm then. You can say this: Tom Petty back in the day got this right, you know? Tom Petty got it right. "You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down." "No, I'm going to stand my ground," Tom Petty says. This is precisely what Scripture, what Jesus is pointing to. What are we called to do as Christians when the gates of hell come looking for us? As Franz figured out, in Austria in the 1930s, when the gates of Nazi hell come for you, what do you do? When the gates of Putin's hell come looking for you, what do you do? "We stand," says Paul. "We don't back down," says Tom Petty. "We stand our ground." Because we're not called to fight against evil, we're called to stand. Because the trouble with fighting evil is this: whether it's on Twitter or in political elections or quite literally on every single battlefield in the history of the world, the trouble with fighting evil is that the temptation becomes too great to employ evil means in order to defeat evil. And when that happens, we're guilty of evil ourselves. This is the temptation with fighting, with taking up arms. It's always that we would end up using evil methods in order to defeat the evil we want to fight against. And when that happens, we make evil choices ourselves. The evil we fight simply migrates. It infects us, you could say, and we participate in evil as well. And so the call of Jesus is this: we stand against evil. We don't fight it. We won't back down. We won't threaten, hurt, harm, or fight people, but we also won't back down, because it's interesting, after Jesus comes into Jerusalem, his very first act of what is defiance. He rides right up to the temple and says, I'm not going to fight you, but I'm not going to back down. I will stand against what this temple has become, what you've turned it into. And so what Jesus demonstrates here for us on Palm Sunday is that Jesus came to bring peace, that he will not use the weapons of war, the weapons of violence, but he's not going to back down either. But I suppose the big question of the moment of our time right now is, okay, but Brad, what good does standing and not fighting do when evil becomes so severe that it says with a gun pointed at your head, back down, surrender, or we're just going to kill you? I mean, that's the question of the moment, right? That's the question of the global stage right now in our world. What do you do if you have a Russian gun pointed at your head saying, back down, give us your country, or you die? I mean, what good does standing against evil do then? Does there not come a certain point when you have to fight? And you know, it's interesting, as I reflect on the Palm Sunday story, I can't help but think that 2,000 years ago, the Hebrew people were asking themselves that same question. We have lived under Roman oppression for 90 years. Does there not come a point where you have to fight? And you know, here's the thing. I need to tread lightly here. I won't pretend to try to answer that question for a person who's not of faith. That's not my wheelhouse. Further, I have nothing but the utmost respect and admiration for every Ukrainian fighting for their freedom right now. And I think President Zelensky is actually a noble leader. He's doing what he needs to do for his country, for the Ukrainian people. For me, this is not a question what Ukraine should do, but about question about what should the Ukrainian church do? What should the Christian do? What should we do if we ever find ourselves in that god-awful situation they're in today? And, you know, I can also say this. I am a weak, weak man, and I can only speak in theoretical at the moment. Like the painter, how can I show something I've never lived? Things might look very different, you could say, if someone actually had a gun to my head or the head of my family. But be that as it may, I think the path that Jesus takes to his crucifixion, starting with this Palm Sunday procession, if we're going to paint the true Christ, then we have to reckon with what Jesus calls and asks of us here. I mean, if you're a Christian, a person of faith, and you were to ask me, Brad, what if evil is so great in a world that it will kill us if we don't fight back? What if evil is so great that it insists you back down, surrender, or swear allegiance at the point of a gun? What then? And I say this with trepidation and fear, but here's what I believe a painting of the true Christ would say. If it gets to that point, well, then you die. And you get to be a martyr. And you know, we don't like talk about martyrdom in the West anymore. We don't talk about martyrdom in the church in the West here at all anymore. Martyrs, of course, we know plenty of Christians who have a martyrdom complex and think little things like having to wear a mask makes them a martyr, but that doesn't make them a martyr at all. If evil should ever swell to the point that we are left with the choice, fight or die, I believe the true Christ, the painting of the true Christ, the Christ of the Gospels, asks us to choose death. We get to be a martyr in the only and truest sense of the word. And you see, this is a difficult thing to say at a time like this. For the first 300 years of the church glorified in its martyrs. The blood of the martyrs was the seed of the church. To the earliest Christians, the idea that you would fight to defend your freedom or your faith or your country, it was just completely unheard of. Of course you don't fight for any of those things. You choose death instead. You die. You don't back down. You don't play the coward. You stand your ground. But if it comes to it, you die. Because what the earliest Christians knew, what Jesus teaches us, is this great paradox. We overcome the evil of the world by laying down our life. My goodness, this is a great paradox within the Christian faith. And I don't want to jump ahead to Good Friday yet, but if we forever see the cross as an event that did something for us rather than an event we are called to follow, we will continually miss Jesus' demand on our life. Take up your cross and follow. Do what I do. And what did Jesus do? When the mob and the crowd and the forces of evil descended upon him and told him to back down, listen, Jesus, enough of this kingdom talk, enough of standing and challenging the religious institutions, back down or we will kill you, Jesus stood his ground and died. He didn't fight. Instead, he surrendered his life. And so Jesus' arrival in Jerusalem on Palm Sunday, it wasn't a military parade, it was a death march. He would stand and confront the powers of empire, the powers of religion, and when they threatened him with violence, he stood his ground and surrendered his life. And that is the call of the cross to us in the face of evil, that we would do the same. I think a lot about Franz Jagerstätter in the film A Hidden Life, because until this film was made, his life was hidden. Most people didn't even know his story. This lay pastor in the middle of Austria that simply refused to swear allegiance and ended up losing his life because of it, he was unknown. It was just a small act of courage and bravery, a small act of following the true Christ. And he demonstrates a remarkable strength. And with that strength, we do the same. We take up our cross and follow Jesus, doing so even unto death. And so I want to close with the final lines and words from the film A Hidden Life. And it's a quote from George Eliot that simply says this: "The growing good of the world is partly dependent on unhistoric acts. And that things are not so ill with you and me as they might have been is half owing to the number who lived faithfully a hidden life and rest in unvisited tombs." May we have the courage to follow the true Christ. May we have the courage to, like Franz, internalize what the true call of Christ is on our lives. May we have the strength and courage to live out the Jesus path. Friends, for this Holy Week, I trust it is a meaningful one for you. And I look forward to seeing you at the Conrad Center if you're coming in person on Good Friday and Easter, or online here, Good Friday, 10:30 a.m., Easter Sunday, 10:30 a.m., here on YouTube. For now, go in peace.